You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it's Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and it's time for another episode of Health and the Awakening of the Self. My name is Dr. O'Grady. I'm an MD and a naturopath and a teacher of meditation, and we'll be together for the next hour, and then in this program we are interested in health, giving out information to consolidate your health or to restore it, and we'll also give out information in the area of self-inquiry. It's a spiritual technique in the East that's called Vedanta, and it goes back well over 1,000 years. If you follow the exercises that we give out in this program, it'll help you advance your consciousness into a state of freedom, peace, happiness, joy, compassion, and all the other good qualities that lie dormant within you. It's a question of wakening up. Just like the Buddha means the awakened one. So by following these instructions, you can activate and your real self as distinct from the false self or the fake self or the non-existent self, as Buddha calls it. The non-existent self might seem real on the surface, but that is the personality, the ego, the mind, and the persona. The persona in Greek or Latin means the mask. And why is it called a mask? Because it's hiding something that's real. It's not the reality. So, if you follow the techniques and the information given out here, it'll help you in the right direction to activating your real creative self. You can call into this program at any time. The number is 831-427-3772. You can interrupt anything that's going on. It won't matter to us. And our email is freakradio.org. If you have a spiritual teacher and you'd like to have him on this program, please get in touch with me and we'll see about doing that. The slogan, as always in this program, is may the mind be absorbed in the heart. May the mind fall into the heart. May the mind be absorbed in the beingness, the aware presence, the aware beingness, the isness, the I am-ness. That's the more fundamental level of our own individual life. All right, we are going to start the program tonight with Master Muji. He's going to talk about, his talk is, the name of the talk is Go Into the Solitary Confinement with Yourself. Now, there's an exercise in this clip, so I normally ring the bell to remind you to pay attention, okay? And learn the exercise and do it when you're not on the air, when you're not here, when we're not on the air. Okay. I'm just setting that up now.
We are up against seemingly a huge obstacle because of years of conditioning. Somehow seems to hold that kind of construct of me as the one who is the progressive entity going through life finding something. And that belief is so strong. Millions and millions of beings are in that state, searching, trying to put the jigsaw together, trying to find a strategy to get to a place of ultimate rest. But all that movement is happening in the land of relativity all the time. You are already that in which this play of relativity is taking place. You are already this it is not enough that it stays as a belief. It has to be really recognized. It has to be recognized in the heart, and immediately the pressure, the fear of failure, the pressure to succeed, all of this drops away as totally illusory. You are this. You are this. And it is confirming itself. I have shown you the direct path that has no distance, actually. Only the distance of a thought. I am only showing you not a path, but a mirror. To look at something which has been missed. The missing of the obvious. And once we miss this obvious somehow, then you have a journey to go. Some people here, I've asked them this exercise, please do it. Keep your sense of I am just by itself. Simple thing. Keep it by itself. In the beginning, you do it for 5 to 10 minutes, because in the beginning, you're going to get very tired. I want to emphasize the important, because today, for the moment, is the last satsang for now. Some of you are going to go away, and you will never return anywhere as you were before. For some people, those bridges are burnt inside the heart. They are free. For others, they are in the smell of freedom. They are burning. They are in the burning gut of the ego. That is okay. That grace will continue. For others, they are more somehow sharpening, maturing within their own inquiry, to see that inquiry does not need to be a heavy mental process. That inquiry is in self inspired by grace. You see, you said grace visited you in 3 occasions. It visited a lot more, but you missed them. But those are the 3 ones that were memorable. And grace will bring constantly this inquiry and introduce new facets of inquiry spontaneously. Be patient, be trusting. It is doing that. Grace brought you here. Grace is serving you. Grace is another word for the truth of who you are. It's there. You are never out of grace. But this thing will come. I say to some of you, if you have to leave and you still feel you have not come, somehow your heart is not completely at rest, take this little exercise with you. The natural feeling of existence. Stay with it. Try to not allow it to identify with other thoughts, memory, images. Just try and do this for 5, 7 minutes, 10 minutes at a time. Then get up, take a break, go for a walk. And when you feel, go and sit again for another 5 minutes and develop a little bit of earnestness in this practice. In the beginning, just because I said this, keep it alone to itself. You're going to experience a lot of trouble. I'm going to give you some trouble, some very good trouble. Because when you do this, you'll begin to see how much noise you're living with. When we say this, you'll see how much noise you're living with. I've been saying, if you go to any chai shop, any restaurant, sit quietly next to some people and just listen a little bit for 5 minutes, the nature of the conversations we have. How many times we say, I, me, you, this, that, mine, like this. And then try and identify, when they say I, what is it referring to? Is it consciousness or the body? And you'll have an idea of how much consciousness is identified with the body. Maybe even in our own case. And you'll see where the mistake is lying, you see. And it's not something I want to tell people, try and correct this. I don't say correct this. I find a much easier way. Find a sense I am. That is already consciousness. Don't call it a person, a man, woman, or anything. Just feel a natural sense of being and go into solitary confinement with yourself. Just short periods for a while and try not to go off with the other thoughts. Just keep it here. You will feel many times you lose. Somehow the attention is too strong for the distraction, for the past, or for image making, or for intention. It will keep going off. Each time you discover this, just when you're conscious, bring it back, just to stay and marinate in itself. Like this. Then it will come again, something. And then for a while you'll feel very tired. Maybe after 3 minutes, very tired. You think it's very mental work. It's not mental work. It's just that the mind is very strong. and it's attaching itself onto the beingness, so to speak. So just to isolate that presence through your own discernment might feel very difficult at first, but stick with it. And gradually you will start to feel somehow that the thought force is pushed off and the feeling of presence is more strong. When that feeling of presence is being more and more by itself, you'll feel very peaceful, naturally happy, free of the mental disturbance, free of emotional disturbance, free from the need to be making decisions and running after things. You'll feel grand, beautiful, silent. Yeah? Then thoughts come again, and again they'll come second attack. They gather up force and come again. And never mind, you again sit. With a little exercise consistency, you'll find more space is being naturally with you for longer periods. At a certain point, it becomes effortless, not mental, not tiresome. As a thought arises, you'll be able to identify immediately, this is not original to me, and you can leave it. And then something beautiful happens. An effortless and spontaneous discernment of what is an auspicious thought to follow and what is not will come by itself without the need of identifying with the ego. It will manifest like this. So I just have to outline through these words these things, because they are of incredible value in maintaining your peace, securing your peace. Even don't want to put maintaining, because there's nobody maintaining it. At the moment is your attention is being given the title of I, and that attention will maintain the peace somehow. So I know I've said many things. I don't want you to just write them down, but just to be listening to them in a kind of panoramic listening. Just open and listen without identity. Because I am not speaking to you as a person speaking to another person. It's only the consciousness is conversing with itself. Consciousness is speaking with consciousness about consciousness. And when it listens like this, it's very different. It's not donkey work. It means that with your ability as consciousness, because you're not a name and form, you're not the body, you're not just the mind. You're more like a spacious intelligence even is operating in front of you. And like this, when you've understood, it's like automatically everything comes back into alignment by itself. This is the power of consciousness. This is why some great saint, Master Christ himself also say, trust in God, he says, trust also in me, because I have overcome the world. And this is a man that never left his homeland. How could he say, I overcome the world? He meant, I overcome the world here. I understood what it means, how the mind can work, all its ways, even cunning ways, subtle ways, and I've watched all of them from the place of being, and I am transcendental to them. I've not caught up in the traffic of mind anymore. And such a one, he says, trust me, because only such a one is really trustworthy, deeply, in any time, any occasion, any circumstance, any place. Their being is constant, reliable, not fickle. Not I love you today and tomorrow you upset me, I don't love you tomorrow. This is not love. This is why it's called awakening. I mean, wake up from this distortion.
Okay, that was Master Muji speaking about giving that exercise and explaining how to use it. He did talk about grace, about the natural grace we have in our beingness. And, you know, I've heard it said in the past that if you take one step towards the infinite, towards reality, reality will take 100 steps towards you. So grace is working. Once you start the process, grace will be working with you to help you unfold to the final stages of consciousness and the realization of who you really are. So he says you're never out of grace. So that's a good thing to keep in our mind. So by doing the exercises here, you know, you can't really become enlightened just by reading a book or by hearing somebody on the radio. But if you do the exercises that we give out here, that's the last clip, there was an exercise. And later on in the program, when I play a kind of a guided meditation, there'll be another exercise there for you to do. All right. I don't know if you've been listening to our recent programs, but we've been we're on the subject basically of high blood pressure, and we've given out some information around that, and like vitamin D. Low vitamin D is one of the causes. Diabetes is another cause, but heavy metal in our system. You could say heavy metal poisoning or heavy metal imbibed in our body, which shouldn't be there. That came up as another cause for having high blood pressure. So if you have high blood pressure, it's good to get in, inform yourself about this information. It's not something you read very often about in the papers or here on the radio. So it might seem a little new to you. Because you're probably not aware of this heavy metal situation, so it'd be good for you to listen carefully.
Hi, this is Dr. Mark Hyman. Welcome back. Are you heavy? It could be making you sick and tired and age prematurely. And I don't mean heavy with fat. I mean heavy with heavy metals like mercury. Unfortunately, toxic mercury problems are pretty common. Along with polar bears, beluga whales, ducks, otters, panthers, and almost all river fish, as well as most large ocean fish, we humans are poisoning ourselves with mercury at ever-increasing rates. There's no doubt about it. Mercury is the most alarming disease-causing source of environmental toxicity that I see daily in my practice. So many of my patients have toxic levels of mercury, and they're not alone. I personally suffered from mercury toxicity and chronic fatigue, of which I cured myself in part by getting rid of the mercury in my body. So I know about this firsthand. How did I get toxic? Well, I polluted myself by growing up on tuna fish sandwiches, eating sushi, living in Beijing, which heats all its homes with coal, a source of major mercury poisoning in the environment, and having a mouthful of amalgam or mercury fillings. All of these exposures, combined with my genes, prevent me from effectively detoxifying metals in my body, led to a slow and significant poisoning of my cells, and the effects were obvious. I was tired, I was weak, I couldn't think, I had muscle pain and twitches, insomnia, digestive problems, food allergies, depression, anxiety. But it was only by discovering high levels of mercury in my hair and urine and slowly detoxifying myself that I was able to get better. I've seen this over and over in my patients too, from chronic fatigue to fibromyalgia to depression, anxiety, obesity, dementia, Parkinson's disease, cancer, heart failure, heart disease. The message is clear. We're being poisoned. And this is such an important public health and personal issue for so many people that I'm using this blog and the next one as well to fully explain the extent of mercury issues. I'll show you the science behind the mercury and share some stories about patients who've suffered and talk about the way we need to deal with it. But first, I'd like to share with you what I learned a few years ago at one of the most important international conferences on mercury yet to be held. It was called The Impact of Mercury on Human Health and the Environment, and it was presented at Tulane University School of Public Health in New Orleans. There was a unique international group of policymakers, environmental scientists, toxicologists, biochemists, journalists, academic physicians, practicing pediatricians, neurologists, and dentists who were gathered. We were there to make sense of the environmental impact, toxicology, basic science, public policy, and health implications of one of the least studied and perhaps the greatest threats to our long-term health, mercury. I'll be using this week's blog to discuss some of what I learned at the conference. Number one, mercury levels are on the rise. Dr. Barry Cole is an adjunct professor at Tulane, and he provided a unique overview of the impact of industrialization on environmental mercury levels through a description of the levels of mercury in the ice cores extracted from the pristine Fremont Glacier in Wyoming. See, over the past 100 years, there's been a 30-fold increase in mercury deposition, 70% of which is from human sources. In fact, there was an exponential peak in mercury occurring in the last 40 years due to major industrialization. So where does all this mercury come from? Well, much of it comes from coal-fired industrial plants and from chloralkali plants that use mercury in the process of making chlorine used in plastics, pesticide, PVC pipes, and more. Also, we learned that risk increases with the dose. Harvey Clewell from Environ Health Sciences Institute reviewed the epidemiologic studies from Seychelles and Faroe Islands. He showed that the risk of toxicity increases with higher doses of mercury. Also, we learned about the health effects of mercury. How do we get mercury in our body? Well, sources are widespread and include mercury vapors in the ambient air, ingestion via drinking water, fish, dental fillings, vaccines, occupational exposures, home exposures including fluorescent light bulbs, thermostats, batteries, red tattoo dye, skin lightening creams, and over-the-counter OTC products such as contact lens fluid, neosinephrine, and more. Wow. Now, you absorb about 80% of the inhaled mercury vapor and nearly 100% of mercury in fish from your gut. The mercury is then distributed in the brains and the kidneys and can be readily transferred by the placenta to the fetus. It's also eliminated by urine and feces and expired air and breast milk. The major toxicity is from mercury's ability to bind to sulfur-containing molecules in the body found in nearly every enzyme as well as the mitochondria, those energy-producing factories, as well as other chemical binding sites in our cells. So it literally jams our biochemistry. So how does this affect us and our kids? Well, the symptoms and diseases of these exposures have been varied and may mimic other problems, so they're confused with other diseases. But they include nervous system toxicity with symptoms of shyness or emotional volatility or nervousness or insomnia or memory problems or hard time concentrating. They have other neurologic problems like Parkinson's symptoms, tremor, loss of balance, impaired hearing, tunnel vision, slurred speech, headache, fatigue, impaired sexual function, and depression. It can also cause kidney toxicity with protein in the urine and also digestive symptoms like nausea and vomiting and colitis. It can also cause skin problems like dermatitis and gum disease and sores in the mouth and too much salivation. So mercury toxicity is a serious issue. Now what about dentistry and mercury? Well, silver fillings or amalgams contain inorganic mercury. Now, mercury exposure from amalgams is estimated to be between 3 and 17 micrograms a day from chewing, brushing, grinding, or even slow corrosion. It takes a long time to clear mercury from the body, so once it's in, it comes out very slowly. In fact, people with amalgam fillings have significantly elevated blood mercury levels, 3 to 5 times more mercury in the urine, and 2 to 12 times more mercury in their tissues than those without fillings. However, blood and urine mercury levels don't really relate that well to the mercury load in your body tissues or the severity of your symptoms. See, research on sheep and monkeys with dental fillings have shown that the blood mercury levels remain low even though their tissue mercury levels were high. And urine mercury levels aren't really much better because they mainly reflect the cumulative dose of inorganic mercury in the kidneys, and there exists only a very weak correlation with levels in other target tissues. So kidneys don't always tell us the real story in urine. But the American Dental Association says it's still safe to use mercury or silver fillings. And that's something I've always wondered about, considering that the EPA, or the Environmental Protection Agency, considers mercury, once it's removed from old fillings, to be toxic waste that has to be disposed of as such. Let me put this another way. It's apparently all right to put mercury fillings in your mouth, but it's not okay to throw them in the garbage. It's actually illegal. So before you start taking your fillings out, consider this. There are other things you can do to reduce your exposure and to identify if you have toxic levels of mercury. Now I'd like to sum up what we learned today and offer some suggestions for reducing your exposure. 1. Industrial exposure to mercury is significant and comes from coal burning mostly, 220 million pounds a year, and chloralkali plants. 2. The main ways that humans are exposed are from contaminated fish and fillings in your mouth. 3. Mercury can affect nearly all of your organs, especially brain, heart, kidneys, and gut. 4. Many chronic diseases can be worsened by mercury, including neurologic disease, ADD, autism, heart disease, autoimmune disease, and more. 5. Some of us are genetically better adapted to getting rid of the mercury than others, leading to variable effects in the population, so not everybody's equally affected. 6, you should reduce your exposure by never eating river fish and limiting your other fish consumption to small wild fish. If it fits in your pan, it's probably okay. And also avoiding tuna, swordfish, shark, tilefish, and more. Blood tests are relatively worthless for analyzing mercury toxicity unless you've had a lot of recent exposure to eating fish, like sushi or tuna. Hair tests only check for mercury from fish and not from fillings, so they only give you a partial picture. The only way to find out your total body load of mercury is to take a medication with the sulfur molecules that bind to the mercury like flypaper. This is called DMSA or DMPS. If you are toxic and sick, you may consider addressing your dental health by seeing a biological dentist who can safely help you deal with the mercury in your mouth. Going to see a conventional dentist who drills out your fillings without any precautions or protection can lead to serious health consequences, and I strongly advise against it. However, it can be done safely and effectively. Next time, I'm going to give you more advice on how to safely eliminate the mercury from your body if you find you're toxic.
Okay, that was some good introductory information from an MD. I forgot his name now, Dr. Mark something Hyman, Dr. Mark Hyman. And yeah, remember, just to recap a few things, you know, coal is one of the biggest polluters of mercury in the environment. So we have also mercury in fish, and the government has a warning about that for pregnant women, about how much fish you can eat and what kind of fish. Generally, we don't eat large fish because they accumulate more mercury by eating a lot of the small fish. So small fish is safer. Aluminum as a metal can be imbibed into the body through antiperspirant things you can buy in the store. I don't know why they still have it in their products. It gets absorbed. Anything you put on the skin gets absorbed into your body. And aluminum is also implicated in Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, if you don't want Alzheimer's disease, you better keep away from some of these metals. A lot of sick people have taken all the mercury out of their mouth. Now, in Europe, most of the countries, you can't use mercury anymore. But in the United States, I think you can still use it. We're always behind when it comes to this kind of information. Not sure why, because we have a very strong money lobby. Doesn't always see the value of doing things correctly. They're more influenced by the money they can make. Heavy metals get lodged in the brain and the kidney, as he told you. Now, if you are a sick person and you have amalgam mercury in your mouth and your teeth, don't just rush out to the nearest dentist and have him remove it. It has to be removed in a certain way, and there's such a thing as ecological dentists, and they measure the voltage potential in each tooth, and it has to come out in a certain order. So beware of that. Otherwise, you could get quite sick if you just randomly take it out in any order. That most dentists won't be aware of this, but, you know, I've told you at least. Yeah, it's banned. Amalgams are banned in most countries in Europe now. All right, we'll come back to Dr. Mark Hyman in a minute. But right now, we're going to play some music from Nana Niskouri, getting close. A very beautiful Greek singer. You don't hear her on the radio so much anymore, but she was one of my favorite singers in the past. So she's singing with somebody else here, and it's like a duet. Thank you. That was Nana Niskouri, a beautiful singer from Greece. And just before, we're going to have Dr. Hyman again continue on his talk about mercury, about heavy metals and how to remove them from the body. You remember one thing you said, I just want to emphasize, is that a blood test is not a very good indication of how much mercury is in your body unless you've been eating sushi and some other things recently. So what happens is the mercury gets deposited in the deeper tissues in the body, and the most accurate test for that is called hair analysis. You have to take a sample of your hair and send it away to the laboratory. Most MD doctors are not aware of this test or don't know how to do it or don't do it. There are certain kind of chelation agents. Once you start them, you can measure the increased level of the heavy mercuries in your urine. And in that way, you know you're passing these metals out of your body. So those two methods are useful to know about. All right, we'll continue now with... We'll continue now with Dr. Mark Hyman.
Hi, this is Dr. Mark Hyman. Now, after my last blog, I'm sure many of you were discouraged and depressed about mercury and its toxic effects. The bad news is I'm going to review more of these effects and the things I learned at the medical conference on mercury. But the good news is I will leave you with a clear plan on how to help your body detoxify from mercury and recover your health. I've done this successfully and safely with hundreds and hundreds of patients over the last 10 years, including myself. So now let's get back to the research from this conference. What about mercury and autism? Well, last week I talked a little bit about the link between mercury fillings and autism. Now I'd like to discuss the effects of mercury on this condition in greater detail. Boyd Haley from the University of Kentucky Medical Center is a vociferous opponent of dental fillings. The toxicology literature and the decades of his own research fuel his fervor. The National Institutes of Health funded his research for 25 years until he began to seriously call into question the safety of dental amalgams, the use of thimerosal, another form of mercury in vaccines, and their correlation with autism. He reported the dramatic rises in autism rates. The numbers were stunning, over 900% in less than a generation in California and 714% increase in autism nationwide. He reported on the dramatic increase in autism rates in California since the introduction of the hepatitis B vaccine in 1990, and an overall increase in the vaccine schedule from about 10 to about 27 vaccines. In 1999, thimerosal was removed from vaccines as parents gained increased awareness of the issue. In the first three quarters of 2004, the data showed a decline in the incidence of autism in California for the first time. Dr. Haley also reported on the toxicity of thimerosal, which is used in vaccines as a preservative. It's a form of mercury. It is quickly converted to ethyl mercury in the body, where it moves rapidly from the blood to the brain. He also reported on the data showing the synergistic effect of metals with each other, so mercury, lead, and so forth. For example, the dose of lead and mercury would cause death in 1 out of 100 people is magnified when you are exposed to both lead and mercury, leading to a lethal dose 100% of the time when combined even at low levels. This is in animal studies. Mercury in autism is also something that was talked about by Dr. Jane Eldar, who is the chief of pediatric allergy immunology at Tulane. She talked more about the possible link between thimerosal and the vaccines in autism. In California, rigorous standards of reporting of autism were in place because the social benefits were tied to the accurate diagnosis, so the increases in diagnosis are very likely to be real. During the first 25 years of reporting, 6,527 cases were reported of autism, but then the rates skyrocketed. It took only 3 years during the 1990s to add another 6,596 cases. From 1987 to 1998, there was a 273% increase in autism cases in California. The CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics raised an autism alarm, stating that 1 in 166 children in the U.S. have autistic spectrum disorder. Currently, 1/6 of all children under the age of 18 have developmental disability. That's nearly 20% of the population who may not be able to be productive members of society. Much of this could be due to mercury toxicity. And that's not just a guess. It's actually based on the analysis of the real dose of thimerosal received by these children after the change in the vaccination schedule. In people with a genetic susceptibility, such as defects in enzymes that are responsible for detoxifying or getting rid of heavy metals, prenatal and early postnatal exposure to mercury leads to neurologic damage resulting in autistic symptoms. Other potential sources of early exposure in the fetus are maternal dental fillings, fish consumption, ear drops, and nasal drops. But the vaccines may even be more problematic. They present a significant source of mercury exposure in RhoGAM, which is to prevent fetal blood disease, influenza vaccines during pregnancy, and childhood immunizations. The maximum exposure from these vaccines in the first 6 months of life is 187.5 micrograms of mercury, far exceeding limits set by the World Health Organization and the EPA. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the safe level for daily exposure to mercury for a 5-kilogram, 2-month-old infant is 0.5 micrograms or 0.1 microgram per kilogram. But these limits are set for methylmercury primarily from fish, not from ethylmercury from vaccines. The typical 2-month vaccination schedule for a baby includes DPT, HIV, and hepatitis B. Combined, these vaccines contain 62.5 micrograms of mercury. That's a whopping 125 times the EPA's safe limits for a daily single exposure. Like lead, there may be no safe level, and children are susceptible more than adults to the toxic effects of mercury. Dr. Eldar said that there appears to be a correlation between immune system malfunctioning in both autism and mercury toxicity. Now, these specific immune abnormalities have been found in 30 to 70% of autistic children. What about mercury in adults? Well, you can see the devastating effect of mercury toxicity on kids. But what about adults? Dr. Robert Nash is a practicing neurologist, and he reviewed the mercury-associated diseases and their mechanisms, controversies, and treatment options. The toxic effects, he suggests, spread across a broad spectrum of diseases, including autism, Alzheimer's, ALS, MS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, neurodevelopmental diseases, kidney failure, and cancer. So how can this be possible? Well, the mechanism of mercury poisoning in the adult brain may be related to proteins involved in mercury excretion, including glutathione, glutathione transferase, metallothionein, and ApoE. These are a lot of big words, but the bottom line is that mercury jams up your brain chemistry. It also poisons your cells, as well as depletes it of key vitamins like glutathione, vitamin C, B1, and B6. It can also affect the central nervous system by concentrating in the spinal fluid and the kidneys by concentrating in the kidneys. Mercury also inhibits nerve growth and easily goes across the placenta. It can also reduce nerve cell communication and function, which leads to problems with neurofibrillary tangles, which is a very common feature of Alzheimer's. He also said that biologically, the case of mercury as a potential contributing factor to Alzheimer's is more complete than for that of autism. Now, Dr. Nash concludes that mercury retention and toxicity is made worse by certain things in your diet, by antibiotics, by other toxins like cadmium and lead, and also your genetic susceptibility. So no level of mercury exposure from amalgams or from fish or from any source can be considered safe. Mercury toxicity also may be linked with heart disease. Now, two studies have reported an increased risk of heart attack, while another has shown no risk. But the data presented on heart failure from unknown causes is very compelling. Biopsy samples found 22,000 times the level of mercury in people with heart failure from unknown causes compared to controls whose heart failure was caused by a virus or heart attack or high blood pressure. In fact, one of my patients had this exact problem. She was 62 years old, facing a heart transplant. I found she had mercury toxicity. I took out the mercury from her system using a comprehensive treatment plan, and her heart function improved by 130%, and she's still doing great 5 years later. So, first, we have to realize that there is a subset of the population that can't really excrete it, and they're at higher risk. And this susceptibility is due to genetics, to diet, to exposure to other toxins. Now, given the susceptibility, we have to realize that mercury is a risk factor in many diseases, but it can safely be measured. Now, we have to realize that genetics make us more at risk, but we can do something about it. Now, we have to do more studies on this. We need more information and more science, and yet we still have enough information to know what to do. Now, I want people to know that just because this topic is mostly ignored by conventional medicine and dentistry, it isn't any less important or relevant to our health or our children's health, and it can be treated. In my practice, I've seen the benefits of detoxifying from mercury. My patients have recovered from things like dementia, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, Parkinson's, heart failure, MS, depression, autoimmune diseases like colitis and rheumatoid arthritis, and many other things. Of course, that doesn't mean that mercury is the cause of these conditions, but simply maybe one of the many causes that has to be considered. The good news is that there is a way to get the heavy metals out of your body, and you can recover from many of the chronic symptoms that may be connected to mercury or lead toxicity. But I do not recommend that you detox from mercury without a trained doctor's supervision. Unfortunately, there are no large control studies looking at this problem, and I'm working on getting studies done on this and other areas of systems and functional medicine better funded so we can have some answers. But right now, we have to go with what we know and the experience and knowledge of many doctors over many years doing this. But realize that we do know how to help you detoxify effectively and deal with the effects of low levels of mercury toxicity. Thank you.
What I'm speaking, I have to tell you this, because it is your chance to see it. And we are up against seemingly a huge obstacle because of years of conditioning. Somehow seems to hold that kind of construct of me as the one who is the progressive entity going through life finding something. And that belief is so strong. Millions and millions of beings are in that state, searching, trying to put the jigsaw together, trying to find a strategy to get to a place of ultimate rest. But all that movement is happening in the land of relativity all the time. You are already that in which this play of relativity is taking place. You are already this. It is not enough that it stays as a belief. It has to be really recognized. It has to be recognized in the heart, and immediately. What are you trying to find? Are you trying to fix a problem or know who you are? Be clear about it. If you're trying to fix a problem, it's because you forget who you are and you are seeing problems. Be the self. You are here. You are just this. Pay attention only to yourself. Looking at the items arising in your mind, and you're giving significance to them. Oh, look at this one, but this is so big. No. Be the seer. You're only the seer. But the mind is saying, but what are you
we are going to play for you all together here on stage.
Listeners, I'm on the phone here.
Very
somebody
impressive
just called
piece
in, so I wasn't
music
able to put them online.
I personally don't
know some information about
the composition.
So I'm going to play
with
some
more
music
joy in
for
it
a minute, then I'll be
and at the same
the
time,
line, right?
Okay, more thanks hope than this music. Whatever last year brought to you, to all of you here in the audience, take this melody with you at home in your memory, and let this music give you new hope for the future. You promise me that?
Yes.
And now I wish you all the best for your life, and of course a lot of music.
That was Hallelujah by André Rieu from the Dutchland, Holland. And also singing in that chorus is, of course, Susan I forgot her last name now, but it'll come to me in a minute. All right, so I had a caller on the line there, and he wanted a lot of information about different things, and I wasn't able to sort the radio out. I somehow pressed the wrong button. So I've got to revise that again for the next listener. Okay, we're getting towards the end of the show right now. So now we have the introverted type of guided meditation type of thing. So if you could find a comfortable position and just maybe bring your attention inside. You can close your eyes if you want to and listen to the guided words by Master Muji.
I want to ask you, scanning inwardly, who is inside here? Scanning inwardly with a light of introspection, who is dwelling inside here? Some entity? Can you find you? Are there some coordinates we can follow to reach where you are? Is there you? If there is space, is there some worry that this is not responsible to be like this? Who will take care of my life? How can I live like this if there's only space here? Is there something inwardly that is interested in truth? Along with football and shopping and things. Are you empty or full? Is there a you that has an agenda, intention? Is there a context for your existence that is important for a you? Are you filled with noise? Or do you not know what it means to be empty or full? Are you finding you know nothing? And you are no thing. Is there something that you need to salvage? Are you burning too quickly? is self-consciousness holding you back? Is that sense there, you see? Do you have an appointment with something that keeps freedom waiting? Is it too costly to allow yourself to simply be? Who will you disappoint? Does later have more appeal than now? Are you waiting to go beyond? Or can you see that these are ideas arising in what you timelessly are? If freedom is in one hand, what is in the other hand? If you are already empty, remain as you are. If you are not, contemplate this thing. Can anything stand in your way in truth? Or is this not merely imagined?
Okay, that was a little introvert exercise that you might have learned, hopefully, something from. We've come to the end of another show of Health and the Awakening of the Self. So I hope you enjoyed some of the show and learned something important. I'll be back next week at Monday from 6 to 8, and next Tuesday at the same time, tonight, 6 to 8, 6, 8 to 9. So we have 2 hours on Monday and 1 hour on Tuesday. Thank you for being with me, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Don't forget to keep up the exercise. And we'll go out with some music here. So see you next week.
And she sings it wonderfully. Give her an enormous applause, Suzanne Ehrens.
It won't be easy, you'll think it's strange when I try to explain how I feel. But I still need your love after all that I've done. You won't be. Is a girl you once knew, although she's dressed up to the nines at sixes and sevens with you. I had to let it happen, I had to change, couldn't stay.
Uh-huh.